Hi, I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Krabeshni.
And welcome to Building with Builders.
Our podcast where we believe that building is fun.
Super fun.
So much fun.
Build Her Collective was created to help women with building and renovating. And we believe that with the right tools, everyone can build. For us, it's all about encouraging women to take back control of the building process and really achieve their dreams.
We are women in the building industry, and as developers, builders, and project managers, it's our passion to share everything we know with other women doing the same. And that's why we've created this podcast for you.
So if you love all things building,
you're into design,
keen on the numbers,
about to renovate,
thinking and dreaming of that forever home and what it would look like,
or even developing for profit,
then you've found your family.
Subscribe to our podcast and follow our journey over at buildhercollective.com.au.
Are you wondering what it is like to build in a post-pandemic world? Well, times have changed and the way you workshop things have changed. So in this podcast, we're really going to kind of go through why the situation exists, what it is about this unique environment that is driving, I guess, the marketplace and the industry and how they're reacting to us. And we're going to look at builders and trades. We're going to look at the supply chain and what's happening there. We're also going to talk about professional services and how clients can kind of interact with that and workshop that scenario for the best possible solution with this really different landscape.
We're going to break this podcast down into looking at a few different areas and give some insights as to what's happening with builders and trades, suppliers, professional services and clients. But we might start off by just talking about the timing of things. So at the best of times, people underestimate how long certain stages take in their building and renovating process anyway. So now that we're in the post-pandemic era, we need to be a little bit mindful of how much time we're asking people to do things in and giving ourselves some space to be able to allocate more time to different phases of the projects. So we're going to dig into that a little bit more. But first, let's talk about what's actually happening on the ground.
We basically shut our industry down residentially for about 6 months last year, 7 months last year. What that meant is we still had people wanting to do the work, but they had to hold off because you weren't allowed to work in a space where someone was living, and the banks changed and the lending criteria changed. So people were unable to unlock that capital. It didn't mean that those projects went away. Actually, what we saw was a lot of people spend that time kind of planning how they needed to change their home and what their home needed to provide and give to them as an outcome. And I guess, you know, the bonus of being locked in your house for 7 months and not being able to leave, you know, that environment is you get a really unique insight into what your home should be providing for you that it may not be at the moment.
Yeah, and now our homes need to do so much more for us. So a home just used to be a home, but now a home is also a workspace. It might be a workspace for one or two people in the household that have different types of jobs. So one workspace might not actually be suitable for two different people in two different industries. And it also needs to be able to provide all that entertainment that you would normally get outside of the home. So I read an article which I thought was a pretty good point. It was talking about how we've kind of gone back to, in a way, backyard kids, so kids who play at home, rather than rushing around, getting to the park and going out and being all these different places, having those fun experiences at home. The flip side of that means that our home needs to function in a new way and our home needs to be more than it used to be.
Yeah, it's interesting that the study in the house used to be the area where people dumped their stuff and never actually used, and now it's like one of those vital zones. There will be a different type of way that we use our home, and we need to adapt to how we live and how we move because of that. In the same way that we went through the generation where women were at home cooking and cleaning and doing all those things, and then we started to introduce appliances and women would leave the home and our home adapted to, I guess, creating a different type of environment and a type of system that would work for a working family.
So what's the flow-on effect of that? Outside of what was happening on site, so Rebecca touched on the industry being affected by people building for those 7 months. There were sort of two aspects to that. And there's a flow-on effect to the two different aspects of it. So the first part where building, particularly here in Victoria, the amount of people on site was reduced. So building still happened in stage three, but you could only have a maximum amount of people on site. So that actually slowed down the process of building, but also made building uneconomical to a lot of builders, so they had to shut down their sites.
Yeah, you also weren't allowed to have people build on a site where people were living. So there were a whole heap of different environments that stopped people or reduced people's capacity. And I know output from different designers and suppliers was reduced as well because they were trying to school their children while design homes for other people. So instead of being able to produce 10 projects, they could only produce 5.
So now keeping that in mind, we have to remember that all that work that should have been done in that year is now not done and is being finalised or finished. One of the things to remember on building sites is you get a whole lot of momentum when you start constructing. And to stop and down tools and then build that momentum up, re-engage all your trades, get them activated, reschedule them in, takes a lot of effort. Those projects are now happening. So there's the backlog that we're dealing with.
Plus there's also the stuff that would normally be done now because there's always the flow on effect of what the projects were done. And then there's the government recognises that construction drives the economy. So they put into place a whole heap of grants, which is sending everything into overdrive. So that sets a scenario of there's a lot of work. What that means is good builders are booked out a year in advance, if not more. There are more projects than people can physically take on. So that's at the builder level and at the trade level. So where we would normally have a working crew of certain people and we'd be able to ring them up and say, okay, with a week's notice, you can come to site. We're now finding we need to book them in 4 weeks in advance. Those projects then get tied up. So the amount of time it's taking to get through a project is lengthened because the trades are spread too thin. They're trying to service too many people.
What's really happening is there's a bit of a yin and a yang. So at times there's an abundance of work and it's hard to find a builder. It means that builders get to pick the projects they want to do. Then at times there's projects are scarce and a lot of builders are fighting for the same work. So then they're pricing their projects really keenly or sharply because there's a lot of competition. So at the moment we're in the part of the roller coaster, I suppose, that you'd call the building industry, where there's a lot of work and there aren't enough builders necessary to fulfill all that work within that time, given those three factors.
Builders are able to cherry pick and they're going to choose the most exciting or the most profitable or the easiest projects that they can do. We add that to the fact that there's supplier shortages across the board. So we're talking timber, you know, and that's a perfect storm when we talk about timber because we had the fires of last year that wiped out a whole heap of timber suppliers. Then we're adding that to been sourcing material from other countries like New Zealand, which have had lockdowns, and so they're fulfilling their industry requirements. But also a lot of that timber is going to America because they're paying more than what we're paying here. So our timber's been off-sourced. So that means that we're seeing timber increasing across the board. I'm pretty sure I got an email that said it was 15% increase in timber. Never seen things go back down again though, that's interesting. So you wonder why building keeps on getting more expensive. I mean, these are some of the things. So the pricing might drop a touch, but it won't drop on the consumer level normally.
One of the little golden rules that I tend to work by is you'll always pay more for construction in the future than you will pay for today. And this is sort of the things that start to feed into that preface. We're also hearing that concrete in the next 2 years is going to go up a lot. So a lot of people are trying to lock in their concrete prices with their suppliers now, particularly for big, large volume contracts. We're hearing from suppliers that there are really long lead times to bring materials in from overseas. So anything that you're trying to procure from overseas is going to take far longer than it would normally.
In fact, some of those supply chains have actually shut down altogether and we can't get supply at all because there's also that movement issue. There's also QA issues, right? So quality issues or quality assurance issues. Normally, let's say I was importing windows, which I don't, but let's say I was, I would design them up, I'd fly over there, I'd check them all off, and then they'd ship them here. Well, you can't do that now. It's a different way of operating. So now someone who would normally import their windows is now also in the market for windows locally, which is meaning that supplier then has more demand locally, but all of their components are still coming from overseas, and they may not have increased that supply chain because they may not have anticipated this need at this point in time. Laminates, another example.
I was just thinking joinery. So like there are some particular things in buildings that have long lead times that we know and we just deal with. Laminate and joinery is one of the longer lead times, but windows and so forth. But that's now getting to be, was it 4 months the last time we looked at it, if not a bit longer?
Yeah, so I would normally work on a 3-4 month time frame with them, but good joiners are booked out 6 months. And I guess the thing is, we all want the great suppliers or the really good efficient suppliers. Well, the good efficient suppliers know their parameters, and so they have to work with them, and they're trying to lock in supply early. So can you see at this point we've got an industry which is struggling to keep up, and yet everyone still wants something now because now they feel like they've waited an extra year?
Mm-hmm. That ties in very nicely to our professional services. So in respect to what's happening with them, they still have the same time requirement to do a job, but they've got jobs that may have started that were put on hold due to the pandemic because of, you know, uncertainty around jobs and things like that, that now are being put back on track. So that means they've also got a backlog. Now, we all know to get something drawn up and to work through the design process, either with an architect or a draftsperson, takes time. It takes multiple revisions, and they can only work as fast as they can work. You know, interestingly, we were just talking to a land surveyor there, and he was explaining that even in his field, he's finding that he's needing to employ a lot more land surveyors to get through the work that he's got on, based on that idea that everyone's sort of reigniting their jobs. And he's now looking at how can he get more graduates into the role, how can he train them as quickly as they need to be trained to get them producing for him. So there's a bit of a, I suppose what we don't always realise when we're trying to engage someone is all the other things that are happening in that business to either upskill their staff or engage new staff or get ready to try and meet a demand that's not always going to be there consistently. It's almost to put out a fire.
Building surveyors have that. Oh, building surveyors have such a backlog. So trying to get a project through, and councils as well have a massive backlog because, again, they've all been working from home and under these stressful conditions, and they haven't been able to turn out the same amount of work.
Yeah, particularly authorities that don't have the capacity to quickly adapt to a workforce working from home has been particularly slow. And lastly, let's touch on clients. What's happening with clients and people who are wanting to engage building services and trades right now?
I guess there's fear around the market in terms of moving. We've still got a situation where the bank lending hasn't opened back up, which is leading to more people renovating or, I guess, making good their home and, I guess, spending all that time thinking about their hopes and dreams and not spending time going on lovely holidays. So in some situations, they've got more disposable income that they can then funnel into creating that better home environment. So what can we do?
Look, I mean, what can we do other than be flexible enough to be able to take the information that we're getting and put it together in our plan, but also be as smart as we can be about procuring services and people?
Yeah, and so understanding and being aware of how we come across as a client, turning yourself into the ideal client, where the power is with the services and the builders. We really do need to turn ourselves into the ideal client that's easy to work with, is efficient, is helpful, is going to have the best outcome. We also need to really help them get through that process and have that clear communication ahead of time. So, for example, that might be locking in someone with a 6 or 8 month lead time, understanding that it's not the end of the world and that's just what we've got at the moment.
The other thing would be looking at what we're specifying and where those materials are coming from. If you can find things that are locally produced or locally sourced, that would be more ideal than having to rely on import, but also looking at alternative solutions. So whether you can procure some quantities of materials that's reasonable for you before you start, or it's going to be very hard for you to get suppliers to hold stock for you. So maybe also making timely decisions closer to the actual build period rather than locking in too early, because one of the things about certainty, and we talk about it in sort of the design game, the more certainty you can have going into quoting, the better outcome you have in your prices. Now, we're running the risk of not being able to get the products that you want when you want them and having to make a whole lot of changes halfway through construction. So I suppose what we're saying here is let's be a little bit smart about that. Maybe use some PC sums or allowances to get you on the books of the builder and get that build started, and then actually make some of those final decisions about the finishes pretty close to when you actually need those materials. So you're actually picking from a pool of availability rather than a wish list that may or may not be available.
Yeah, so you can either do that sort of way, or you can lock in your materials, but that's going to require you to pay up front. So you're going to have the capital. So I was speaking to a builder who was also speaking to a client. I can understand both sides of the story here. What was happening was the client had got quotes from a supplier, but the supplier had a price increase coming. So the builder was then going to have to lock that in ahead of time. So way before they would normally hamper their cash flow locking in tiles, like at the point where they're signing the contract, they were having to pay out those deposits. So, you know, in that case, that client and the builder worked together, and the client put up half the deposit and the builder put up half the deposit, and they were able to kind of fund their way through that so they could lock in the price before the 15% increase. And so there are ways to work together, but it's kind of understanding the scenario that you're working within and then trying to, I guess, manufacture an outcome. So you might have a builder that you've got a really great working relationship. If so, fantastic. And if you have great trust, there may be a way that you can find to work with that builder and say, do you know what? I don't have my plans finalized yet. I can't get you to quote and tender, but I know I want to work with you. So now's the time that we would say work with the builder through the value engineering and the tendering process, the design process, because they will hold that spot if you've got that good relationship. So you know you can start working August, as long as you have the trust that they're still going to be providing you with a competitive pricing. It's about what your triggers are, because time is becoming the issue, the dollars are becoming an issue. And I guess one way to stop the traditional process would be do full design. We know that's taking longer than normal now. So where it might have taken 3 months, it's taking 6 months, right? So we've got double that. Then we would normally go to tender with builders. So builders are so busy, they can barely tender because they're trying to keep up with all the work that they're trying to keep up to. So a tender period might have taken 6 weeks and now it's taking 10 weeks. And instead of, you might lose half your tender pool at that period of time. And then once you finally sign someone up for the job, instead of being able to start in 1 month's time, they might not have a vacancy for 6 to 8 months. So you can see that that's completely blown your project time frame out by more than double.
It's almost like building in an alternate reality.
It is, isn't it? So it's about turning that around and being smart about the way you approach that and not getting frustrated with people not getting back to you, but being understanding of their position at the moment.
And also understanding that, you know, you can plan the way you want to execute your build. You have that power to be able to do that. It's about figuring out the right pathway that you need to take. So there you have it. That's life post-pandemic. Let us know, you know, reach out to us if you are struggling with it, if you're finding it hard. If you're a Build Her member, come along to a Q&A and talk through it with us. If you're not a Build Her member and you want some help, drop us an email into info or send us a DM on Instagram or a message on Facebook. We're around all the socials.
Thanks for listening to Building with Build Her. We'd love for you to spread the word.
For show notes, links and downloads and other awesome resources and freebies, head to buildhercollective.com.au. And don't forget, that's Build Her with an H-E-R.
And if you enjoyed this episode, it would mean so much to both of us if you could take a minute or two to leave a review.
And don't forget to subscribe so you can listen next time as we talk all things building and women making their mark in the building industry.